Welcome to the Round 14 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined this week by FB Donkey.
G'day, mate. And it's not just me either.
No, and Faz as well.
G'day, boys. It's feels like we've got the old band back together now.
Yep. Yeah, it's the first time you two have been on this.
I think this year, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Dunny misses doing the show with you too.
And Dunny's me, mate. I love Dunny. I really do miss talking to him and catching up. So he sends me a kind message all the time just to make sure he stays in touch.
Yeah, I have a feeling you'd prefer to do the show with Dunny than with me, Mark, but that's okay. My ego can take that.
Nah, I don't think your ego can take that.
I thought you were going to say, no, I prefer doing the show with you, but thanks for that, buddy. So we're going to try and inject some positivity to the show, because nobody wants to hear three people bitch and moan about Supercoach, but we're well across the fact that most people are feeling that way about Supercoach at the moment. We've been hit by a lot of injuries. We've hit by silly suspensions with Walters punching people in the guts.
I thought that was good, though. Wasn't that a good thing?
We've been trading into rookies that have got injured like Ridley or got dropped like Smith. It is crushing spirits across the board. So instead of sort of taking the dour take on it, we'll try not to focus on the downs and instead focus on the ups. And the major up is this is the last bloody week of the bye. So just 1 week to go, and hopefully it's just executing on part three of your bye plans. Let's whip around and start as we do each week with how we've scored on the weekend. Mark, you took a bit of a battering in terms of player availability in week one, and that means that I think you're pretty well set up for the next 2 weeks of the buys, and that's good for you because you didn't actually suffer too much in week one. So I'm expecting some positivity and good news from you.
Not as well as I was hoping, I guess, because I was set up for a really good week in round 13, but with McRae, McLean, and then my two real uniques in Parker and Cruiser, not completely dominating. That really just held me back from a super score, which I think that I was probably in line for, especially Cruiser. Like, this was the 1 week that Goldstein didn't play where Cruiser was, so it was so important just this one round for him to have a big one, and he couldn't get it done. If it wasn't for a couple of quick goals in the third quarter, he would have been in big trouble. So I scored 1892, which was a pretty good score, I guess, and I jumped 500 spots, but basically back to where I started from at the start of the buys, just inside the top 1500. So 1436 is my rank, and I was probably really hoping to be busting into the top 1000 coming out of the buys.
Well, if you're set up for a big round three, you're still trending to finishing sort of above where you were at the end of the three-round series, Mark. So still not too bad. Faz, how about you, mate? How'd you go?
A bit short on Mark this week. I was 18-23, so got hit, as I'm imagining a lot of the listeners did, pretty hard by the St Kilda team sheet on the week. So had both Phillips and Caulfield, so that sort of threw the trading plans into a bit of disarray. And unfortunately, haven't been able to sort of set up as well for this coming round as I was hoping. So I was just trying to get back a bit of the ground I lost in terms of my ranking, which is now sitting at about the 3,500 mark.
Which is still a lot higher than Marcus.
Thanks, bud.
That does make it feel a bit better.
And I've got the lowest score of the week as well. Not by too much, Faz, but you won bragging rights by 3 points this week over me. I scored 1820. It's the second week in a row that I've had to trade in order to get 18 players on field. I just hit 18 again this week, and I have a feeling I'll just hit 18 again this coming week in round 14. So very frustrating to basically just eke through, but hopefully I will get away with no donuts, although some players basically scored as well as a donut for my team. Broughton Yo, which was at least good, 144 nice. Just after the buys, yep. And I traded out Pendlebury, and I'll trade in Oliver in this week. So I'm looking forward to getting closer to, just a rolled gold team. The one thing I am happy with my team is that coming out of the buys, pretty much as close to true premium as you could ask for, especially with McRae going down, just, no glaring holes except for Shaw at D6 and Walters at F6. And if that's the worst of your worries, that's pretty good. So I'm happy at least that I haven't sacrificed too much in terms of the long term, but definitely the buys have not been too kind, and I'll be happy to just tread water by the end of the few weeks. So yeah, that's it for my update this week. Again, we won't go through a league and group update just because things are so fluid throughout this buy series. And so with that, we'll head straight into the questions. The first and probably one of the bigger topics for the week this week is around the injury to Jack McRae. Fortunately, he's done a hammy and it looks like 3 to 4 weeks. And a bit frustrating because he also was, you know, week one of the buys would be maybe slightly less painful for buy planning if he was a week three buy player. I know a lot of people brought him in because he was a week one buy player. So it's extra frustrating. And with a 4 week injury at this stage of the season, and during the buys, you probably are looking to trade out McRae, which makes it extra annoying because it might change, you know, your ability to complete your team this week and whatnot. So another sort of kick to the guts, unfortunately, to the general fantasy community, but we're here to help you navigate through that.
You missed the biggest one, Marcus. I think he lost more than 70,000 in a week. I don't know too many players that have done that in the history of Supercoach.
I hate to say this, but I don't have him, so I'm like sneakily a little bit happy that it's happened.
I don't think it's very sneaky.
In terms of options, guys, what is your most immediate game plan? Are you thinking of side swapping to the next best true premium? If you don't have Oliver, that seems like a pretty obvious one. McRae to Oliver off his bye, another young gun. We got questions about Treloar and Kelly as well. And then Paul Jones, one of our patrons, also asks, this one's a bit out of left field, but we've got the number one fan club sitting in our podcast. Yeah. So McRae to Rockcliffe. Is that a crazy move? Mark, you already have Rockcliffe, so you obviously won't be doing that, although you'll be endorsing that, I'm sure. Where's your head at with dealing with this injury?
So I have Rockcliffe, so that's really out of the calculations for me, obviously. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing that at all. I have hope in Rockcliffe rather than confidence. He kicked a few goals on the weekend and had a great score, but I don't really expect that to be a reliable thing to continue. I'll just be hoping for it each week. So I guess that depends on your team's situation. So if you really need that 200,000, which is a lot of money, if you really need that to make the final upgrade for your team, then I can understand why you might go in that direction. But if you don't, then I think that using the 80,000 that you can get from going to Treloar, Kelly, or Oliver would be pretty useful. Or if you don't have Cripps, he's only 530 now. So you still get a bit of money out of it and you get one of the potential absolute guns for the run home. So I'll be looking to side swap this week. It's a real tricky one. Like if it is genuinely only 3 weeks, you could make a case for keeping him. 3 to 4 with someone that's going to just continue to lose money and doesn't actually have a like super premium scoring history before this year. And we don't know what he's going to be like coming back from a hammy. I think that he is probably a trade if you can manage it. Where are you at, Faz?
Because I've still got Holman in my team, I'm actually looking at potentially downgrading McRae this week and then holding onto a trade, which I'll use in the first week coming out of the buy. So into round 15, I'll then use some of that cash that I've generated by downgrading McRae, likely to Paul Ahern at this stage is who I'm looking at. I'll then be using the saved up cash from that trade to turn Holman into a premium the following week.
It opens up a few options with premiums as well because there's a few reasonable mids in the team on the buy this week.
That's right. So I'm feeling a little less restricted in who I'm choosing from by getting all of the players on the buy this week coming back. So, you know, I've got Geelong back available, Richmond. So there'll be, you know, obviously just have the full slate of players to choose from coming into next week.
But you'll still be doing McRae out, I guess, is the crux of that, even though it's a detoured sort of way to a side swap, you'll still be moving him on for another premium.
Yes, I think I will be, and I shouldn't be putting too much credence in this, but his scoring had dropped off a little bit coming into the injury last week against Port Adelaide. The two scores before that were 102 and 105, which in their own right don't sound all that bad, but when they're coming off a 4 week patch where his lowest score was 141, he had sort of fallen away from that, you know, real ultra premium scoring that he'd put together for a few weeks there.
All right. In terms of top options this week, the three guns that are fresh off the bye, Clayton Oliver, Adam Treloar, Josh Kelly. Now, Josh Kelly's obviously been disappointing to anyone who's started him so far. May have sort of burnt some bridges there. But from an ongoing perspective, the groin certainly got to be a concern still. So he certainly seems like the riskiest prospect of the three. And I guess Oliver is probably the front runner, both in terms of average so far this year, but also, you know, when we've been talking about top eight predictions, Oliver certainly seemed like the one that could have gone on to burn you by not having him and sort of continuing to take that next step as well. Is that oversimplifying it to say that Oliver seems like the most obvious option in terms of fresh off the bye players?
It's interesting with the three in under consideration, and they are the three that I'm considering. Oliver actually sits third for me. That may just be team specific for my team because I already have Petrarca and Hogan and Gorn, and I'm reluctant to be relying on too many Melbourne premiums every week, even if they are doing quite well. So I actually have him, yeah, personally at number three. Just the other guys are a little bit older and have like potentially just as good scoring potential.
Wow, okay. Kelly's groin, not a concern for you?
Yeah, of course, it's some concern. Because they can be reoccurring injuries, and we've only seen three games back from him, and one of them was against the Suns where he had 40-plus touches, and the Suns have just been absolutely woeful recently, especially in the midfield. So I think that could be a bit of a trap, potentially. And so you're right to bring that up, but I think that he's also absolute super coach gun, and they gave him a really extended time off to try and get that groin right. So I get you can gamble that maybe it is right and that everything's going to work out okay. I know that they can hang around the groins, like Joe Danaher hasn't come back yet, and they've just said that he might be a bit longer out with the groin. So, but some of them do come back from groins after a bit of a rest and everything works out. So, yeah, look, I think that there are concerns, but there's concerns about Oliver as well. Like, I know that he's a third-year player. Is his body going to be able to hold up for the whole year? I know that we've had these doubts before and he just keeps blowing us away, but he has had a few niggles this year that he's at different times during the year. So I don't think the injury risk is really, really different between those two guys.
Wow, okay. But one has noted sort of struggles so far this year, and the other's more just a disbelief that somebody that young can keep it going for three seasons in a row at that sort of that pace without slowing down.
Are you bringing one of these guys in?
Yeah, I have this option this week because I traded Pendlebury out. So, yeah, I can pick okay. from the three as well.
I just think, like, I'd take the fifth-year player almost every time.
Yeah, and I completely would agree with that if Kelly were injury-free, but a groin can flare up. You can come back for 4 weeks, be perfectly fine. Just tax yourself too much 1 week and it'll flare back up. Just seems a little bit risky versus perceived risk. But, I mean, reading between the lines, though, it sounds like you have Treloar right up there, which surprises me because I'm normally the Treloar fanboy out of the two of us. Do you actually have him as number one?
Like, we both picked him last year and I was the fanboy at the start of the year. I was all over that pick and it really didn't work out. Like, we both got destroyed by that pick, and that was just not fun carrying him for the whole year. But I do actually like Collingwood's draw. Their short-term draw is really good. There's a reason why you traded Pendles out, because he's not like that really high-scoring mid for them anymore. And I know that there's a bit of a spread of points at Collingwood because there is a bit of competition for points, but could see Treloar being the one that sort of comes out of that pack a little bit. I know Grundy's killing it, but him and sort of Grundy being the top two, and you could sort of see a 110, 115, and he is actually pretty fun to barrack for when he's playing well.
Do note that I think Treloar struggled last year because of a groin. Yeah, I like Oliver and Treloar with that 1-2 punch. Like, Gorn, Oliver, Grundy, Treloar, like, having a great ruck midfield partnership definitely goes a long way to scoring big points. I'd say something that Oliver has in favour over Treloar is, like, and you've already brought it up, just the competition for points. Nathan Jones has dropped off a bit over the last couple of years, and Jack Viney's been affected by injury coming back this year. Oliver is the one that's scoring all the points there. Whereas with Treloar, yes, he looks like he's taking the lion's share at the moment, but with Collingwood, we've almost got that situation that we had with, if not almost, we have that situation that we had with Sydney over the past few years where there's just too many good mids fighting for not even points in this instance, like also time in the midfield, which is perhaps even more extreme than in Sydney, where like, yes, you had Hanbury, Kennedy, Jack, whatever, but they were all getting the midfield minutes versus Lloyd and whatever. But now you've got like Degoe even threatening to come into the midfield. I've got question marks about that, I suppose.
I know what you mean. And Oliver's obviously going to be playing on ball the whole time. It's just that like there is competition for points at Melbourne, so there might not be competition so much for that key midfield spot, but they have got a bunch of premiums coming from their team, and there's only so many premiums that can actually come from one team without limiting the scoring capacity of some of them. So, and that's where Kelly comes into consideration for me, because I'm not sure that the Giants have a lot of premiums, like really competing for points this year. Like Heath Shaw's dropped off. They don't have Mumford. They don't really have a ruckman that's dominating. Cameron's been really inconsistent. They don't have Toby Green. Dylan Shields really not getting it done. Callum Ward's not scoring at a really high rate. I know Cornelio's doing better, but maybe that there is actually space for him to be one of the top two premiums at that side. And also, like, so say this is not the question that we're asking now. We're actually asking who's going to be the best over the next 9 weeks. But if you had to pick one player now out of those three to be in a keeper league for the next 5 years, who would you pick?
Ooh, that's hard.
See, the answer for me is easily Josh Kelly.
I think that I find it close between Oliver and Kelly. I put Treloar a long way down that list.
Oh, really? I might even go Treloar.
Mm.
Like, contested beast, can go forward, kicks goals, like, brute strength. He reminds me most of the Martin type, like, Martin Ablett type out of all of them. I guess we all have very different views. I don't think you can go too far wrong, right? We're talking, like, 115 versus 114 versus 110. Like, it's bits and bobs here and there. Kelly, though, I think it's interesting to note, and funny, too, like, Oliver and Treloar are looking like they're going to end up playing for top eight teams, whereas Kelly might not. And so even though you're talking about there being less competition for points at GWS, that might hurt them in terms of winning overall sort of pie this year. Like Oliver and Treloar are potentially going to face a bit more of those games where they're downhill skiing than Kelly might. And Kelly plays more of that outside ball. So you might argue that it helps when his team's winning a little bit more as well, compared to Oliver and Treloar, who are much more in the guts and actually winning and extracting the ball. Anyway, we've spent enough time on this. Let's just...
Sorry, can I just add one more element to this? Should Bontempelli be in that conversation? I know that he has picked up a bit of a knee niggle this week. I think putting that aside, should he be in the conversation?
The forward time still gets me. The forward time and Western Bulldogs not being a top eight team gets me. No, for me. I'm very tempted. I love picking Bont. I love the romance in that pick, but yeah, not quite for me. I don't know if I'm being too dismissive. Faz?
I guess his midfield minutes could pick up with McRae out for a few weeks coming up, but at the same time, I am concerned about just the fact that they're not going to win too many games for the rest of the season. They looked pretty awful against Port Adelaide last week. They were barely in the game, and I can see a fair few more of those coming up this year. They're almost a $5 underdog against North Melbourne this week. So I think that sort of really says it all.
What? That's so ridiculous. Wow.
Can I just finish with one question here, Faz? And that is, like, I don't think we definitively got who you would take out of the three.
I have Clayton Oliver already in my team. So I think that I would therefore say that I have Oliver clearly above Treloar. Kelly, you know, wasn't really available at the time that I picked Oliver. But I think that the ongoing injury concern with Kelly would have me continuing to favour Oliver over Kelly. But my order would be Oliver, Kelly, Treloar.
Before I came on here, it was Kelly, Treloar, Oliver.
I'm Oliver, Treloar, Kelly. So
what the hell? 0% help for anyone. Except I guess that both of you guys went Oliver. So if people want to ignore me and take Oliver, which may be the smart move, there you go.
All right, just quick one before we wrap up this midfield time. So last word on Rocky. It sounds like you're a no. He was serviceable at Mark. He was serviceable through the buys, and you're happy to have him in your team, but you wouldn't recommend him as a like-for-like replacement for a McRae type unless you needed the cash.
I don't think it's that simple. I don't think he's a like-for-like for McRae, but, I mean, he's not that different in price compared to when I bought him in, and he had a terrible one against the Hawks. He just had a dirty day, but since then he's posted 100 and 127. So what does that information tell you? Well, it tells you that if you're really low on trades or you need a value pick, he may be at 400,000, someone you want to bring in.
Faz?
It's a no for me.
Yeah, the 41 for me was enough to say he's a no, even though I do think in hindsight, like if anyone was struggling through that period, he's ended up being a good selection. Mm. But moving forward, no for me. All right, last one on McRae. This is a little bit of an oddball one. Should we be holding a spot for McRae when he returns? That seems like a no to me.
No, I wouldn't be planning on that. As Faz said, like his scoring had dropped off a little bit, and this injury may get in the way of him having a best ever season.
All right, let's move on to the rookies now. Everybody is obviously who's available this week is off the bye, so that's good. Doesn't add any complexity where you're trading in a Giro who's still going to miss next week. We've got four blokes who are on the bubble, three blokes who've played one game. We'll start off with the bubble blokes. Miocek, defender, basement rookie price, 102.4, scored the 97 and then the 36. Even though he's listed as a defender, has actually been playing up forward for Collingwood. You've got Sam Taylor for GWS, 117,000, scored 57 and 59, played in the two games in the lead up to the bye. And then a couple of MPP players. You've got Tom Murphy, a deaf mid swingman, 125,000, playing for North Melbourne, scoring 40 and 42. And Paul Ahern, the clear standout of this round, mid forward, 123,900, 84 in his debut game, 57, former top 10 draft pick and long-awaited rookie. Mid forward flexibility is good as well. So apart from Ahern, do you see many people doing sort of a double down this week? Is it are most people just bringing Ahern and calling it quits?
That's from what I've seen. Most people have sort of planned around the fact that they will be bringing in Ahern this week and haven't really been thinking about a second one. Do you guys think that Ahern is an absolute must-have? Like, regardless of your situation, you have to find a way to bring him in because of his pedigree, scoring potential, job security, and dual position status.
Yep. I think of all the DPP statuses, mid-forward's the most important. In years past, dev mid has been a bit more prevalent with some of our backline premiums. And so the dev mid pivot can be a bit more helpful than it is this year. This year, I don't have a single dev mid in my team to sort of finish the season as a primo.
I think Brayshaw is the only primo, really.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the DPP to me is definitely a pretty huge factor. It means that you can replace a midfield premium with either a midfield rookie or a forward rookie. So it opens up four options. And if you have Sicily, it could potentially open up two more on top of that as well.
So out of the three other guys, Miocek, Taylor, and Murphy, I think Miocek's the only one that interests me at all. 102,000, mature age, did perform really well in game one. The part of game two that really worries me is that I think he was on like 15 with 5 minutes to go. He got a bit of junk time there even to get to 36. The other thing is Ben Reed's listed as 1 week, although realistically that's not that much of a threat because when is Reed ever fit, seriously? and the other one is Darcy Moorhead, another guy that's never fit, but he's only 1 to 2 weeks away with a hamstring. So to have two guys in Reed and Moore that are competing for his one spot in that team, and Buckley's already said that they don't want to play two talls up forward, and then it seems to be a structure that's really, really key to Collingwood doing well this year is playing those midfielders at full forward. That seems a huge threat to his job security.
Yeah, I think the main people would be looking at additional rookie to Ahern would probably be anyone who brought Ahern in early, which there are a few people who did that. So before we sort of round out the rookies, it'd probably be make sense for us to go to the one gamers because they're couple of tempting one gamers in particular who both scored above 90 in their first game and then were faced with a bye. One of them plays for both your boys' team, and that's Mason Redmond, the Essendon defender, 113,000, scored 90 on debut. And you've got Joel Smith, a deaf mid who we've seen play previously, 152,000, reflective of the fact that he has already debuted. He scored 91, and again, that DPP is slightly more attractive, but you're paying 20K extra, which is not ideal because you're unlikely to be cashing out any of these rookies on the run home.
Did I notice that the third one is Jared Brander? Did I notice you brought him in this week?
I did. Like I've mentioned, I'm just struggling to get guys on field this week, and so I took the risk.
So you used a trade and got a whopping 25 points?
Yeah, it was really poor. The main driver for it was I'm going to finish with more cash than I can spend.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, and I thought that having the Sicily Brander combination would be pretty cute. And I thought, take a risk. Maybe he scores 50. He plays again next week and it might work out. Obviously, the 25 was horse crap. and now I look like a complete fool. Thanks for bringing that up. I did not mention him that I traded him in and you have publicly shamed me.
And I only got that because I actually checked your team to make sure that you were tracking worse than me this week.
No, thank you. Thank you. And any of the three tempt you guys? I'm guessing Brand is a straight up no after 25.
It's a wait and see at least. Like, you wouldn't want to bring him in straight up. Joel Smith interests me a lot. I have Caulfield in my team, so that defensive mid-link is huge. You have Hunt has gone out, Lever's gone out. They were the two that were probably competing for him with that spot in Melbourne. The risk is that we've seen a Smith come in for Melbourne, a rookie that's done really well in their first couple of games and then went off the radar pretty quickly. So, yeah, you are reading a lot into one game and you're paying a premium for him. But if I was bringing a rookie in other than Ahern, it would actually be Joel Smith this week. And so I think you can pick him with some confidence and then just hope for the best.
No on Redmond?
I think there's a few people competing for his spot. He was awesome in game one. Really, really impressive against the Lions. Love the kid. I did a footy clinic with some of my students there a couple of years ago, and he just totally unasked, found a kid in the group that was really socially awkward and anxious and just took him off and played kick-to-kick with him for like 10 minutes and just chatted to him. And it was the highlight of this kid's life that someone had shown such interest in him. And Mason didn't need to do that at all. He was a 19-year-old kid. And so ever since then, I've been really hoping he would come through and have an awesome career because you don't often see that genuine, amazing, like, humanity from a player. So really hope that he's going to do well, but there's a bit of competition for his spot. I'm interested to know what Faz thinks.
I'm hoping he's keeping just Jordan Ridley's seat warm because I'm stuck with him in my bloody team. God.
Yeah, poor time for Ridley to get injured. I actually called it before the game saying that because we're playing the Lions, Redman may have a good one and may be hard to remove from the team.
Yeah, I think that I wouldn't disagree with any of your points about his spot in the team and yeah, just his job security is probably not looking too strong, but I am pretty excited by him as a player. That's got a lot more to do with my interest as an Essendon supporter than it does as a super coach. I think that there's probably some better options available this week.
He costs $50,100 more, Joel Smith, than Miocek. If Miocek's name this week, do you really take the risk on Smith over Miocek?
With cash not being a huge issue for me, I 100% take Joel Smith.
Okay.
Yeah.
How much of that's defensive midfielder relevance versus his ability to stay on park and score points?
Probably 30 to 40%.
If we can wrap up the rookie section, for anyone who doesn't have Ahern, he's a slam dunk. Most of us wouldn't really be looking at two downgrades at this stage. It doesn't make a huge amount of sense that you'd need that for one upgrade. So the only people who would be looking at an additional downgrade would be doing so because they might have brought Ahern in early, in which case you are either going to bring in Miocek if money's not really an option. Otherwise, it sounds like Joel Smith might be your man. You can pick Smith either as a defensive option or a midfielder. What would you do if you needed to downgrade in the forward line to free up some cash from?
I don't hate the Brander idea if you've got Sicily in your team to open up that DPP there. Of course, cash would have to be sort of not as big of a consideration given Brander's inflated price.
He's almost certainly going to get dropped when Darling gets back to us.
That was the other point, I think, is that you'd probably want to be a team that already has 18 on park this week and Brander can be your 19th player. That's really the only situation I could see.
Although a bit like when Marcus was secretly happy about McRae being injured, I will be secretly barracking pretty hard against Brander now. But Marcus has him in his team, so I wouldn't be picking him.
We might need a refresher on what secretly means, Marcus.
All right, let's wrap up this sweet show with the players that are fresh off the bye, who are premiums and look like they could finish in the top X players of their respective positions. So we'll start off in the midfield. We've basically covered them already, Oliver, Treloar and Kelly. In the rucks, it's pretty obvious, Gorn and Grundy. Of course, Goldstein and Martin are available, but if you're going to trade into a player, you probably want to trade into one of those two because they're the preeminent rucks. Even though Goldstein is attractive at 490, having pumped out a series of 400 pluses. I still think that it's probably not worth the risk that he continues to roller coaster on the run home.
Was that a subtle troll or an obvious troll?
I said I wouldn't bring him in, Mark. Trolling, you would say I would bring him in, and anyone to trade him out was an idiot. I mean, Faz, you have Goldstein. Would if you didn't have him and you were looking for a ruck option, would you actually be considering him after the 4 weeks he's shown?
I can say as a Goldstein owner, I'm still very nervous that I don't have Grundy in my team. So I can see why you would do it if you just didn't have the cash and you wanted to sort of premium up your team and somehow you hadn't reached that point, then he's not a bad budget option. But if you can, I think that the focus should remain Grundy and Gawn. I think that they're the two standout options this year.
Then in the forward line, we've got Hogan and Smith fresh off the buys. They are not bona fide top six forwards, but they're certainly options that are available fresh off the buy who should get pretty close. And in the back line is probably where we have the most interesting discussion. They're five players who might all finish in the top six defenders, so maybe we'll spend a bit more time there. Got Tom McDonald, Harris Andrews, who's actually just been killing it. Rance, even past Rance type numbers, which is exciting to see because we know he had so much talent, but to see that backline effort being converted into Supercoach scores is pretty cool for a Dower defender. And then you've got Crisp, who has that mid flexibility on, so probably the only other one apart from Brayshaw. Brayshaw, of course, is off the buy, but potentially a little bit more risky. Hurley is the big one for me, 460,000. He's been long flagged as coming into my team. He's actually a trade I'll probably make this week. And then Jeremy Howe is another potential top six defender. Mark, are you all finished in the back line with the upgrades?
I am, mate. I guess that with Sicily, there's always a chance that you can swing him around and sort of, if you have the right player available, you could trade a mid or a forward to a backline player. But yeah, I brought Hurley in as my last position, mate.
Faz, you've got one more left in the backline.
I do. I've still got Tom Dodie from Adelaide, who's been very serviceable throughout this year. But I think with so many donuts in my backline this week, it's time for Dodie to go. So in terms of those five options that you've listed, I'm inclined to agree with your assessment there that Hurley looks like the standout option. Hasn't been having a fantastic year just from sort of a football perspective. He's sort of gotten away from doing much in the way of defending, but he's racking up quite a bit of the pill. He seems to be Essendon's quarterback option that they always look to go to set up the play from down back.
In the first seven rounds, his lowest two scores and his only two scores under 100 were 84 and 97. Against Carlton, he scored the 66. It was injury, did he get sore or something?
Yeah, well, he missed a couple after then, so I think that was injury interrupted.
So that 66 has just cycled out of his price movements, came back with a 76 against Richmond and then 93 against Brisbane. 460k for him seems like a decent get.
Interested to know what Faz thinks, because there are people talking about the fact that maybe Essendon's game plan is changing and needs to change and has changed since Hurley picked up that injury and went out and went chipping the ball around the back line less. So maybe there might not be less possessions and less cheap ball for Hurley going forward. And we may have seen that in the last 2 weeks, which is why he's scored under 100 in both games. That's at least an argument that some people are making. I wonder what you think of that.
One of those two games was a pretty big loss to Richmond. So I'd imagine that if you look at sort of Essendon scoring across the board, there was probably a bit of a drop-off. And, you know, the 93 I don't see as being a horrible score. But it did seem like we were playing, I guess, a more exciting brand of football and we were being more direct and sort of moving the ball up the field with speed. So I think that there is a risk there that Hurley, his scoring will suffer a little bit from that. Having said that, though, he's also shown himself to be quite an elite intercept marker throughout his career and has put some pretty good scoring together in previous years. So I don't think that the, you know, chipping around the back line is really a necessary condition for him to score well.
I think the other thing to note is that that risk is priced into his current price point. He's at 460,000, McDonald's 550, Andrews is 510, Crisp is 510, Howe's the next closest at 495. So I would say I'd consider Hurley Howe maybe, and maybe Brayshaw at 450, but relative to, you know, the three other more high scoring options in McDonald, Andrew, and Crisp, they still have that potential downside, but it's not priced into their current price point. Mm. All right, last question to round out the show. How many trades should we have at the end of the buy period? We get this throughout the buy period, and it's probably apt that we tackle this now. Mark, how many will you be looking at post-buys, mate?
Less than I was hoping for, I think. Made a couple of silly trades along the way, maybe. I don't know. I think I'll be looking at 5 coming out of the buys, so it could be 6, depending on what decisions I make. Probably 5. And with a fully upgraded team that I'm really happy with, it'll either be 5 or 4. So there seems to be a bit of variation around that going around. I know that there's some people going down to 4 and 3 over the next 2 weeks. And I still know people with 8 to 10 left as well. The last couple of years, we haven't needed trades on the run home as much as we had sort of a few years before that. And there might have been a few factors causing that, such as late buys and the post round 23 buys for finals teams. So I'm happy to run reasonably low, and I think that I'm just going to wing it with 5, I guess. How about you guys?
I'm going to be 6 after the buys, with Holman to Franklin likely as my 6th trade before round 15 to finish my team.
We're all in unison. I'll be 6 trades after this week, with Holman up to whichever premium midfielder I decide to bring in next week. So, yeah, similar boat to the two of you. And I think that, what are we going to have? Is it 8 rounds to go post-buys or 9 rounds?
9.
So 9 rounds. So 5 buys for 9 rounds. It seems potentially a little bit low, but it's just an injury every two weeks.
That's not too bad.
Yeah.
You just need to get through those first couple of weeks if you can.
Yeah. I think the other thing to keep in mind is when you've come out of the buys, how close are you to your finished team? Because you're not really looking at how many trades do I have after the buys. You're looking at how many trades do I have left when I've completed my team. And the other element is how much have you torched your bench to get to your ideal team or the team that you have today. The more torched your bench is, the more trades you'll need to hang on to. If you've kept fridge types on your bench, then obviously you don't need as many trades and you'll be more comfortable going lower. So that's the other thing to think about.
Yeah, so I am in a weird spot. I have 6 trades left after I trade McRae and I bring in Hearn, and I have $300,000 in the bank and no real way to use it. I would be bringing in an extra premium if I used it. So not sure how I'm going to maneuver around that one.
That sounds like something I normally do.
Well, I'm not doing it by plan. I'm doing it by, like, I just have 300,000 left.
Through osmosis. Look at this.
Well, 300,000 with 6 trades, like, what do? You don't just hold the 300,000.
Yeah, I agree. Well, at least you have fun decisions to make, Mark. And let's finish with a captain's corner. We've still got the buy, so still plenty of options in terms of loopholing this week. Fife, I called him as the clear VC option last week, and I'm glad I went with that. That was pretty good. McRae obviously was also pretty damn tempting, a little bit unfortunate there for those that went with it. I saw, Mark, that you ended up with Fife as captain anyway, so you're happy days. Mitchell wasn't too far behind at 136. This week, who are you gents looking at?
I would really, really like to have Mitchell as my vice-captain. I think against Gold Coast, he could go completely nuts. But I think that Gorn as a vice-captain any week, averaging 125, is a really, really good option. So I may go Gorn into Mitchell, but I think that I might get trapped into holding like a 120-odd from Gorn, which might be a weird spot to be in. Otherwise, it'll be Mitchell into someone playing on Sunday, which I haven't really worked out yet.
Yeah, given the buys, there's not too many options there because it's only the Collingwood-Carlton game coming up on Sunday.
Treloar.
So yeah, Treloar, if you bring him in as an option. Cripps has been a little bit down on form recently, but he'd be another one to consider in that game.
Grundy owners against Carlton, considering Cruiser had a slightly quieter game on the weekend, might also be an option. And I guess if you bring Josh Kelly in, Josh Kelly against Brisbane Lions, that definitely seems like a decent VC option as well. I think I'm personally going to go with Gorn into Mitchell.
Yeah, that's what I'll be doing. I'm going to be jumping on a flight on Saturday morning, so I sort of need my VC to have played by then, and that looks like a pretty good setup there.
Mm. So that's good that you brought that up, mate. You'll be off on holidays to Europe and to some warmer weather. Mark's also going some warmer weather in Cairns, so we'll be without both you gents for 3 weeks. We'll try and do our best not to sink the ship before you return.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for joining throughout the entire buy series, Mark, and for joining through this one last show before you go on break, Faz. Much appreciated.
No, thank you for having me on.
Yep, it's been good. It's been a bloody pleasurable 3 weeks through the buys.
at least had the pleasure of coming on and gloating over your high score against me, Mark. So I hope you've enjoyed that.
Yeah, if you start doing well, if Brander starts pulling out hundreds and if Rockliffe starts pulling out 50-point scores, I might not be coming back.
All right. Good luck, everyone, for your last week of the bye rounds. I'm very excited to see where our community shakes up after this period. And with that, we will catch you all next week. See ya.
See ya. Bye.